The Law Matters Live Radio Show was created to open the lines of communication between law enforcement and the communities they serve. To learn more about Law Matters and support our 501c3 mission, go to lawmatters1030.org. To join the conversation, call in at 520-790-2040. Now, let's start the show. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us this morning. On our show today, we have Jeff Fleetum, the director of the Register of Contractors. Good morning. He's calling in from Phoenix.
Good morning, Sherry. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. We also on the show have Chad Casper with from Pillars to Post, who's a building inspector. So we're going to start out with Jeff, and we're going to round it out with Chad, and hopefully we'll be able to educate you on everything you need to know about upgrading your house, doing repairs, and potentially eventually selling it. So,
at least maybe where to go to get the answers if we don't have the answers, right?
Exactly. You know, and it's that time of year where people are thinking about upgrading their house or adding or making, you know, improvements. What kind of, I have monsoon season sitting here. What kind of information do we want to tell our listeners?
Well, as always hire a licensed contractor and one that's licensed properly to do the work, the scope of work that you want done. That of course, doesn't mean that there couldn't be a problem with it. But if you hire a licensed contractor, then you have options with the Register of Contractors. And it's just a great idea. You have an option if you need to. But licensed contractors tend to be only less than 5% of licensed contractors ever get a complaint. So you're miles ahead doing that. And should there be a problem, you have
a safety net.
A resolution. If it's residential, you have the recovery fund that's available should there not be a resolution. So,
what is the recovery fund?
Well, the recovery fund, each residential licensed contractor, when they first get their license and at each renewal, there's an assessment that goes into a pot of money, if you will, called the recovery fund. And should there be a problem in construction with a licensed contractor, and it doesn't get resolved, then the complainant or the homeowner can file a complaint. That's taken a look at. Say the contractor doesn't handle it, then they can file to the recovery fund once the contractor's license is disciplined. The monies available there are up to $30,000. Now, that doesn't mean if you spent $10,000 that you get $30,000, but recover there. Up to $30,000 per resident, and a licensee, it's up to $200,000. So, a license, if there's a failure. So in the Great Depression, back in the 2008-09s, there were several companies that collapsed, some of them through no fault of their own. However, if there's multiple complaints, then each of those complaints can get the maximum for a license is $200,000. So in other words, if you had seven complainants at $30,000 each, depending on what their level was, the maximum that could be paid out to those seven would be $200,000 in some rate, one way or the other. So does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense. Does this recovery fund also apply to unlicensed handymen?
No, it doesn't apply to anybody except but licensed contractors. And unlicensed handymen, handyman is an interesting term. It's we don't use it in statute. It's not mentioned in statute. Handyman is something, you know, we have so many people coming in here from out of state. And handyman in other parts of the country, and in our country too, can mean a variety of things. A lot of people think a handyman does a remodel, and that might be the case if they're licensed. Just because somebody's not licensed doesn't mean they are quote-unquote a handyman. So generally speaking, I'm not going to read the entire statute, but if there's construction work that the total material and labor is in excess of $1,000, that means over $1,000, and the person needs to be licensed. If it requires, and then if it requires a permit, electrical work, plumbing work is almost always, there's virtually nothing that can be done in that arena that doesn't need a permit. Now, each municipality and your building inspector will explain to you that the municipality that he is in, the jurisdiction he is in, interprets code maybe a little bit different from another jurisdiction. So, in other words, Tucson building officials may interpret the code a little bit differently than Marana. So, if a building permit's required, then it's always a licensee is always needed.
And each person has to be cognizant of their particular area and what they need to do in order to work in that area. You can't watch a YouTube video and go rewire a house.
Well, not exactly. You might be able to find out some things, how to do some minor things. But I would recommend, strongly recommend, anytime you're doing any electrical work, unless you're an electrician, that you hire a licensed electrician. And we've got many qualified licensed contractors in that scope of work in this state. So we're very fortunate that way.
How does mitigation work?
Mitigation? Well, there's a variety of different things. So we have, let's take it this way. Say someone files a complaint and it includes a workmanship allegation. There'll be a job site inspection scheduled with one of our investigators. We'll visit the job site and investigate or look at those items that are listed on the complainant's complaint. The contractor will be there. Our investigator will look at each one of those allegations, determine whether or not it meets or doesn't meet the standards of work. If it meets it, there will be no directive on it, and that'll be listed in the ultimate report. If there is something that doesn't meet standards, then the investigator will direct the contractor to correct it by appropriate means. We don't direct them how to do it. There could be multiple ways how to correct anything, but oftentimes, before these things happen, contractors I keep falling back into complainant and respondent, so I apologize. So typically in our area, a respondent is always a contractor. So if your listeners hear me say that, that's what it is. So if the complainant and the respondent get together, they can resolve these things, and that's what we hope for. There's also, as these things go, we have some mediation type opportunities that if both parties agree to it, then that can happen. And we're experiencing a great number of resolutions before it gets to the Office of Administrative Hearings.
Okay, an investigator for your department, what do they have to do to qualify to be an investigator?
Well, our investigators are construction generalists. They all have ICC certifications. Many of them have been company owners themselves or have been superintendents, those type of things. We have a couple guys that have been in the military in CBs, a Corps of Engineer type thing. So they're all construction.
In the field.
In the field. They've all been in the field. So
okay.
At one level or another. Most of them superintendent to owner level.
So what are some of the scams that people need to be aware of when, let's say we do have monsoon seasons coming up or there is some type of weather damage. What should people be aware of before they hire somebody?
Okay. Well, it's the same whether it comes into our stormy season, rainy season, fire season, any season, really. There's a couple things, and I'll go through them. One, if someone knocks on your door and says, "Hey, I saw your roof needs to be repaired," that's really interesting. That's a red flag to me. I would caution anybody to jump on that opportunity to have your roof repaired with the extra shingles that the guy is saying that he has on his truck. So we have that. We have door-to-door. Not saying that all door-to-door people are scammers, but that's one of the key areas that it happens. People will say this sense of urgency. You've got to do this right now. And during the monsoons or those type of things, or when any sort of wind damage, fire damage, there's always a sense of urgency. You know, if it's my house and my roof is leaking, I've got to have it done now. But when we have these major events, and there's in a neighborhood there's dozens, or in a city there's hundreds of damaged properties. The idea of having each one of these properties fixed in 2 or 3 days is really it's not going to happen. These things take time, so be careful with somebody that tries to pressure you that this has to happen right away, or somebody that says, "Give me cash."
Give
me cash. And I'm not saying that, you know, not everybody that does that, but once the cash is given, the cash is gone.
Yeah.
Or somebody that will come to you with a contract with XYZ company, and you go, the salesperson or the person at your door goes, "This is XYZ company, but make the check out to me personally."
Oh, yeah.
That's a bad sign, and that happens frequently. It happens frequently.
Never pay in cash. Always pay with a check or something that is traceable.
I am recommending that people don't pay in cash. I'm not saying that's I wouldn't pay in cash. So, and I'm recommending that's you really are limiting your opportunities there.
Get a contract. Get it in writing. Everything that's going to be done.
Right.
You want there's it in a, writing and itemized.
Right. So here's the thing. So most of the complaints we get, Sherry, are a result of miscommunication. So I want everybody to understand here, not all complaints that are registered are valid complaints. Not all complaints that a complainant makes is something that the contractor has done wrong. So when I say 95% of contractors don't get complaints, that means that about 5% do. Now, I could be wrong. My chief of operations may be listening, so it could be, it could be 5.7%. That doesn't mean all of those are valid. So a few of them are valid. And it doesn't mean if you have 10 items on your complaint list that all 10 of those don't meet standards. It may mean 3 do. It may be 9. It might be all 10. But here's the thing. A couple things here. So especially in monsoon, when someone gets a quote from an insurance company that lists all the items on that they're going to take care of, that is not a contract. And if your contractor, or you expect your contractor to do it for what the insurance company says, then that'll have to be in the list somehow. Because most, in other words, don't expect your insurance quote to be considered a contract, because it is not a contract. Your contract is separately something that you have between yourself and your contractor, not yourself, your insurance company, and your contractor. And we find all sorts of problems with that when these damaged things happen. So an insurance company may say, Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner, I'm going to give you $500 to repair this. And I, as a contractor, look at it and go, there's no way I'm doing that for $500. That's going to cost me $750. So that's what I'm saying. Don't expect whatever you get listed on your insurance claim to be the ultimate cost of getting anything done. So an estimate is not a contract. A contract, you get an estimate, Your estimate should match what's on your contract, be detailed. So I'm not suggesting, and I know we as a company, we didn't line item cost to things. We listed everything we were going to do and give you a bottom line cost and included everything. So we're going to do this. We're going to repair this part of your roof. We're going to fix this drywall. We're going to do these things. We're going to do this. We're going to do this and do this. We're going to do all of these things for this price.
Okay. So if they do five of those things and three things weren't completed, how do you differentiate with the cost?
If someone writes a contract and doesn't complete it, that's a violation. You got to complete what's in your contract.
Okay.
So
how long does it take if you file a complaint and you send in your evidence, you file a complaint? How long does it typically take for a complaint to be satisfied?
Complaints, generally speaking, there's certain things that are statutory timelines, Sherry, and you know this being in the law field. A complaint reaches our office. It's assigned to an investigator. If it involves workmanship, not all complaints involve workmanship. Not all complaints require an investigation. But if it requires an investigation, from the time it hits our door till the time it is resolved. Now, resolved, I mean, until the time it either is closed as resolved, or it moves into the legal process, which, and as you know, then there are other statutory timelines that go in once you get into a legal process with hearings and those type of things, about 45 days.
Oh.
Total. It used to be a lot longer than that. Used to be when we first took over this administration, it was in the 120 to 150 day range.
So you've tightened it up.
Our processes across the board in the agency are really much better. So I've been blessed with having a great chief and assistant director of compliance. That handles all the investigators, a great legal department. And you've met Jim Knupp, my chief operating officer, great, smart young man. So we're really and our goal is to make improvements. We're a private sector oriented, and that's how we try to do some stuff. So,
well, that sounds great. It sounds like you're doing a really great job up there, too, and I appreciate you coming on the show. I know you said you couldn't hang out.
It's recommended that we don't. So I really prefer being face to face with people that I'm talking to on here. What I did want to let everybody know, though, is our office is open. The Register of Contractors office is open. Now, we encourage, and I encourage anybody to use our online services. Our online services at www anymore, do we?
No.
Everybody knows it's a worldwide rep. ROC.az.gov, ROC.az.gov. And on that website, you can, if you're a contractor, you can file for, if you want to be a contractor, you can put your application in for a new license. You can renew your license. You can change all your stuff on your license. If you're a homeowner and you need to file a complaint, or if a contractor needs to file a complaint against another contractor, you can file complaints online. There's a variety of information online. It's really a robust site. You can check licensees, type in their name, their license number. You can check for contractors. Say you want a plumber, and you type in plumber, and you see a list of plumbers. It's a tremendous site. I encourage you, your listeners, to go to roc.az.gov. If there's something on that site that they're not really comfortable with or they don't understand, please call our office. Please call our office. Always call our office. 877-692-9762. 877-692-9762. Our Phoenix office and our Tucson offices, while we're in this social distancing area, those are appointment onlys. So if you feel that you need to speak to somebody directly face-to-face, you'll need to make an appointment. Through this, I think we probably had maybe three. Everything's getting resolved by the phone or online. That's what I'm saying. I've got an amazing staff. So,
have you ever had a contractor file a complaint against a homeowner?
Well, we don't regulate homeowners.
I was just wondering.
there's lawsuits all the time. So
true that.
Going back and forth. That's why we have your profession. That's the resolution. So. That happens. I'm trying to think what else we have. So, we were ready. We're doing what we need to do. Investigations are still happening. If a complainant or homeowner is uncomfortable doing the inspection at this time, what we do is we close the case, and then the complainant then can reopen it within 6 months. Now, who knows, in that 6 months, they may come to some sort of resolution with the contractor.
True.
But we're moving along. License applications are at the same level. Investigations are still happening at the same level. We haven't seen a downdrop. I think once this is all cleared up, we're going to see a construction tsunami. I want to caution people, if you need something done and somebody says, I can start tomorrow, I would think to myself, why is that? why can you start tomorrow? Why aren't you so busy? So I just had a quote on my driveway to replace my driveway. Took them a couple days to get out here. That's great. But it's just a driveway. It's not some, driveway going up a hill. But they can't get to it for 3 weeks. That's a good sign. That's a good sign. This is what these guys do all the time. It doesn't take them all day. A driveway is like a one-day operation. They pull it up, they clean it up, and they pour the concrete. But they're 3 weeks out, and that's a good sign. If they said we can do it tomorrow, that'd be troubling to me.
Okay, we have a caller. Ingrid, what's on your mind? Ingrid, can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. This has to do with plumbers and copper pipes. Seems to be a very big problem with copper pipes being stolen. You call them up for a little leak in the drip at the faucet, and the next thing you know, they're telling you there's something wrong with your drain, and you no longer have your copper pipe when they're done.
So did that happen to you, Ingrid?
Oh, yes, more than once.
Oh, okay.
I don't even want to get into another thing with a furnace out of my presence.
I'll hang up and listen
before I lose my temper. Thank you.
Okay.
I would suggest, Ingrid, I think it was Ingrid, right?
Correct.
Ingrid, if you feel somebody's stolen something from you, I would call the police.
Yeah.
If someone's stolen something from you, call the police. I can't help people with that. We're not a law enforcement agency. We're administrative. Sherry, you understand all the difference between Title 13 and 32 and those type of things, but we don't have that authority to arrest somebody. If someone's stealing something from you, call the police. Always hire licensed.
No, yes. And just because somebody in a position of authority recommends somebody to you to do some work in your house, don't assume that person is licensed contractor. Do your due diligence and make sure that who you're letting in your home is reputable and not there to steal your copper pipes.
Right.
So, well, I appreciate you coming on the show. I think we're going to take a quick break, and I understand that you said you had to leave. So I'm assuming that, you still have to leave. Nobody sent me anything saying otherwise. So
if you had any other questions, let me know, send them to us. We'll get them answered. We'll get them down to you. You can let your, your listeners know those things. As always, Sherry, I like doing the show, and I'm looking forward to coming down and sitting across the table from you soon. So.
Absolutely. That'll be awesome. I look forward to
Remember, roc.az.gov.
Okay.
roc.az.gov.
Got it.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Sherry.
Stay safe.
Okay, you take care.
Bye-bye. Right. Bye-bye. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a few. Thanks for staying with us. Our next guest is Chad Casper from Pillar to Post Home Inspections. Chad, how you doing? Is he there? Did he hang up on me?
Hello?
Hello, Chad?
Hello. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Thought we lost you.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
I'm hearing a bunch of music and static, and I was like, uh-oh.
Oh. So how long have you been a home inspector?
Home inspector for 3 years.
And what kind of horrible things have you found in these homes?
Oh, my gosh. Just about a little bit of everything. Trying to think. Some of the worst ones are just DIY electrical is usually the scariest one. I did a house built, I think it was built in the 60s or 70s. The homeowner definitely, DIY'd all on his own and put in a brand new AC unit, but didn't upgrade his electrical panel, and so he double tapped the AC unit to the main, and there's probably about four or five other double tap breakers and a bunch of fried outlets. It was a mess. It was scary.
Sounds like a fire hazard.
Yeah.
Well, what I don't understand, this is, people buy a home, it's probably the largest investment they're going to make, and then they start doing things themselves, and that just brings down the value of the home.
Right.
And I know you've been in the industry. What recommendations would you have for our listeners as far as what to do and not to do?
Well, yeah, previous gentleman said, I'll always hire a professional. If you think it's too expensive to hire a professional, wait till you don't. You definitely want to have a home inspected, before you purchase a home. It's just going to give you a good overall snapshot of the condition of the home, when you purchase it. We check up to 1600 different items on a home. A lot of things a lot of people just don't even think we look at, we do. And it ends up, small investment, it could save you hundreds of thousands of dollars down the road.
Give me an idea of some of the things that you look at that people don't consider when they think home inspection.
We look at everything from the foundation all the way to the roof. We look at the major components, electrical, plumbing, HVAC. A lot of people don't realize we check windows and doors and go into the attic. And there's just a lot of things that people don't see that could be potential problems down the road. A lot of things that people just don't even realize are issues or don't understand that they could become issues down the road. And so a lot of times we can find those items and point them out before they can become more serious or at least let them know that it is an issue and needs to be addressed either before they move forward with the purchase or they can decide that they can find a different home.
Is there a way of checking if the house is insulated?
That is one of the things that we do check. Our code of standards are visual only, so we're not going to be tearing open walls to check for insulation. But typically attic spaces, we can see what types of insulation and how much insulation is there.
Well, I find this curious because I'm also a certified closing agent, so I close a lot of loans. And some of the paperwork that's come up lately in the last maybe 3 weeks have included a hold harmless agreement because we didn't check the insulation. And I asked the people, did you have your home inspected? And they shrugged, they didn't know. And I'm like, oh, I think you would know. It's not cheap.
Yeah, no, that is a required item from our state standards that we note the type of insulation and the depth of the insulation at the time of inspection. there are some tools that we do use that can give you a better idea of how well the home is insulated. One of the services that I offer is an infrared thermal camera. We actually will scan the walls and ceiling, and we can detect hot spots, even moisture spots, which always could mean to lack of insulation or even faulty insulation.
So if you're detecting moisture, could they have mold?
That's always a potential, yeah. Anytime there's water damage, there's always the opportunity for that to be growing.
And if that happens, do they have to replace all their insulation?
Yeah, they would have to get a mold specialist in there to remediate that, which would require removing any affected materials, and then, you know, obviously killing anything that is structural, you know, and coating. They would basically scrape off the mold off of any structural components and coat it with the proper chemicals to keep it from growing back.
So, okay, that's not something that you do, though.
No, that is definitely not something that I do.
So if you've got a home inspector comes in your home and, you know, maybe you're buying a house and they're there and they're inspecting it and they find something wrong and they say, hey, I can fix that for you. Is that a cool thing to do?
If a home inspector is saying they could fix it for you, that is definitely not allowed. Our state standards prevent us from doing that because it's a huge conflict of interest. We're a third party. You know, we don't have, you know, a card in the game, so to say. I mean, we're just there really just as independents, just to give our unbiased opinion to the client, which would typically be the home buyer. If we're offering estimates or if we're offering to repair stuff, you know, that's a huge code violation, ethics violation with our state standards. So yeah, that would definitely not be something that you would want an inspector doing.
Do they ever recommend people to go out and fix something? You know, hire my friend. He can fix that.
Some inspectors will recommend people. I usually try to give two or three reputable options. You know, licensed people that I've dealt with in the past or deal with on a regular basis that I've known to be good quality people.
People who are going to do what they say and say what they're
right.
doing. That's unusual.
Normally their agent has a couple of people as well, so they usually end up getting, you know, a handful of names and phone numbers for licensed professionals before they move forward.
You know, I've always told people when you're buying a home, make sure you get it inspected. And
yeah.
Especially, and you know, people think that it's a new build, I don't need an inspection. What do you say to that?
I would say do it. I do quite a bit of new construction builds. A lot of people just assume, hey, it's a brand new house. It's just built. It's perfect. There's nothing wrong with it. And I've not found a perfect house yet. I've found some very, very close ones, but a lot of great houses. But new construction, it's made by men. People make mistakes. They rush the work. Sometimes they do sloppy work. I've seen a few issues here and there on some new builds, but most of the new builds are pretty good, but they do still have some issues.
I've seen where they've not used the quality material that they quoted, and they'll come in with something a little less, and, you know, that's just not kosher. Can you, when you do a new build, do they give you a list of the materials that were supposed to be used, and do you compare that to what you're inspecting, or is it just you go in and inspect like you would an older home?
We don't get a list of what they actually provided as far as equipment and materials. We literally just go in and inspect all the items that we normally would expect on any home, whether that's a new build or, you know, 10, 15, 20, 50-year-old home.
And we had a caller in the previous segment, and I was wondering, do they use copper tubing in their toilets?
I mean, you'll have, like, copper running to the water line connection to the fixture.
Is it exposed? But, or is it in the wall?
There's a little that is exposed. And that's one of the things that we determine the plumbing type in a home is looking for any of the exposed areas.
Okay. I'm a little confused about that.
Yeah, it's usually not more than, you know, half inch or so. It's usually a pretty minimal amount.
Okay. We want to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with Chad. Thanks for staying with us. Our guest is Chad Casper from Pillar to Post Home Inspections. I was wondering, what type of training or certifications, education, do you have to go through to do home inspections?
Oh, I'm sorry. You got cut up on that first part of the question there.
Oh, what type of training and education do you need to do home inspections?
Yeah, so there is a licensing and certification process, and each state is different on how they do that. I know I get a lot of buyers from out of town that, you know, are used to one way or another, but here in Arizona, we're required to do 96 hours of classroom work, and then we have to pass the national exam, and then also we have to do 30 parallel inspections with a licensed home inspector. And then once all that is completed and we pass all the necessary background checks, and we submit all of our paperwork to the state licensing board, which is the Board of Technical Registration. They review all of our stuff. They review a report that we've submitted, and basically they say yay or nay. Once all that's done, then we're out and doing our thing.
So in order to do this, do you have to continue to, like, continuing education like I have to do?
State of Arizona does not require continuing education. I still do continuing education yearly. My company is a franchise, and so every year we have a national conference, and there's continuing education courses that are put on during that conference. And certainly you can take classes on your own. But State of Arizona does not require any CE courses.
Well, that's pretty interesting. Where are the conferences usually held?
They vary year to year. Okay. We have two in Florida, one in Nashville, and they haven't announced the next conference yet, and I don't know if we'll have one this coming year due to the current pandemic, but we'll see.
I know. It's been interesting. Everything we've tried to do has been canceled or postponed. So, you know, it's an interesting time we're in for sure.
Right.
When somebody is looking to hire an inspector, what would you recommend them to consider?
Yeah, obviously you want to make sure that they are licensed, there are professional organizations that you can be members of. Two of the big ones are ASHI, which is the American Society of Home Inspectors, and there's also InterNACHI, very similar to ASHI. So they'd also provide CE courses, and so you can become members of that, of those organizations. But really you want to look for experience, availability. That's always a good one because you do have that 10-day window for the most part to have the home inspected. And if your inspector is booked out 2 weeks, that's obviously not going to work. You want to find out if they offer any other services and options, upgrades, add-on services, or if they're, you know, just offering just the home inspection.
Upgrade and add-on services? What is that?
So I am also pool and spa certified. So if the home has a pool or spa that they would like inspected, they can add that on to any of the home inspection packages that I offer. I also offer sewer scoping services. Mm-hmm. That's not something that's typically done on a home inspection. We can also offer radon testing, mold testing, various other services. Some home inspectors subcontract or even do termite inspections themselves. So there's all sorts of different added services that they can offer. So you can just make one phone call instead of having two or three different groups show up to the house.
Do you do termite inspections?
Termites, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't offer termite, I do have several companies in town that do a great, great job that I will set up for the buyer if they wish, or they can find their own, or typically the agent has their own termite inspector that they usually call.
Now, is this something that if a home buyer is considering to buy a home, that they should call different companies and maybe shop and compare prices, or how do you differentiate from the rest of the people?
Most of my business comes from a referral from the real estate agent. I've developed a lot of good rapport with a lot of great agents, and they'll typically recommend two or three good inspectors and leave it up to the buyer to decide. Most sometimes buyers just say, hey, just tell the agent, like, hey, just hire whomever. Well, I'll go with your recommendation. I trust you. But, yeah, you can definitely do your own search. It is the buyer's right to pick their own inspector. So if your real estate agent says, hey, I really want you to use my guy, you don't have to use their guy. You can hire your own. So, always do your due diligence. Call around, get a couple of talk to a few of them, find out their experience, their demeanor. Some home inspectors can be alarmists. Others are more educational, more kind of hold your hand and walk you through the process. And then also focus on how they present the report. What does their report look like? How quickly can they get you the report? A lot of things that people don't necessarily think about. And I always tell people, don't always focus on the price. Focus on the value that they bring to the table.
When you're doing an inspection, can the potential home buyer be there with you?
Absolutely. In fact, I encourage it. It's easier for me when I can show somebody something and explain it right then and there while we're both looking at that particular issue. And that way, if across the country they're reading my report, they can sometimes make mountains out of molehills in their mind from reading the report. But when they can actually see it and we can actually have a discussion about it right then and there, it helps put their tensions at ease and they kind of get a better handle on, going forward what they need to do.
So if I need a home inspection and I'm buying a new house and it's not a new house, what would I ask for? Do I say I just need a home inspection? I don't want any add-ons, or do you just have packages that you offer and it kind of itemizes what the inspections involve? How does that work?
Yeah, so I offer three different inspection packages. My base package is just your standard home inspection. Just pretty much any home inspector would cover those exact same items.
Is that like a drive-by? The house is there, yes?
Yeah. No. We spend about 2 to 3 hours in a home typically, looking at all these different items and testing all the different systems. From there, if a buyer decides they want to upgrade and add on extra services, they can. Some of those items include the infrared camera that I was talking about earlier. There's appliance recall checks that we also offer, different specialized, mold tests, allergen tests, things along those lines are included in some of those upgrades.
Can you, when you're looking at an appliance, can you tell its age? Is there something on there that tells you how old the appliance is?
Yeah, a lot of times you can pull up the manufacturer information from the data plate on the unit. That is not something that is required in our scope of practice, is determining the age of the appliances, but you can pull up the serial numbers and manufacturer information and find that stuff out pretty easily.
So I wouldn't have thought of a home inspector looking for a recall on an appliance. I think that's awesome. You offer that.
Yeah. It's a great service. Potentially saves them a lot of time and money. The company that offers it will, help you get in contact with the manufacturer to get that repaired at no cost. Or if you just decide, hey, I want to get a new or an upgraded unit, you can get rebates from anywhere up to $300 for an upgraded appliance. So it's a great, great service.
When you're looking at a pool, I've seen some pools that look like, they could use repainting or surfacing, whatever it's called. When you look at pools, are you just looking at the mechanics of it, or are you considering the resurfacing portion?
Yeah, so I get this question a lot, and no, I don't jump into the pool to inspect it. I saw those, this time of year, I wouldn't mind doing that, but it is visual only. So we do a visual inspection of the physical pool, and then we also run all of the mechanical systems to make sure that they are operational. And so a lot of times we can see that the plaster is failing or there's cracks or even rust stains inside the pool. And so we can recommend that they have a professional pool contractor get out there and further evaluate it and provide any estimates for any repairs.
So if somebody has a pool, now you said you do pool and spa inspections. Do you do it the same way somebody who works for a pool company does it?
So we're more of a generalist, and obviously the pool company is going to provide any sort of quotes or estimates for repairs. And so they do a few other items that are beyond our scope of practice.
Like what?
A lot of times they'll do pressure tests. They'll do evaporation tests on the pool, the water levels. They'll even do like dye tests to see if there's any leaks anywhere that are not, you know, visually evident. Those do take several days to perform, and that's just something we just aren't able to do as home inspectors.
Typically, what's the cost of a home inspection?
It really depends on how the home inspector sets that up. My pricing is based off of square footage, and then if there's, you know, any added services or if they upgrade packages. But typically, you know, your standard home, you know, 1,500 square feet, you're probably going to be in the ballpark range of anywhere from $300 to $500, depending on your inspector and what they're providing.
And is it the same type of inspection you would do for, like, an apartment complex? Not so much an apartment complex, but like a duplex or something like that?
Yeah, typically multi-units. We do charge a little bit extra for those because it is a little bit more of a challenge writing the report on some of those. And, you know, you have two kitchens, two of everything, essentially, on duplexes or triplexes. We don't do a ton. Most home inspectors don't do a ton of commercial property, so anything over a fourplex would be considered a commercial property.
Okay, on older homes, and comparing those to newer homes, have you seen with your experience, have you seen a difference in the quality of work?
I think just the main difference between newer homes and older homes is a lot of the items can become very outdated, and if it hasn't been maintained properly, it could be a very costly repair to upgrade a lot of those items. But a lot of times the older homes structurally are in really, really good shape, and, you know, they just have a very unique feel and look to them, so it really just depends on what the buyer is looking into. If they prefer that older look, you know, that's great. If somebody wants something a little new or modern, that doesn't want to have to worry about, you know, a large upkeep bill, newer home might be a better option for them.
So to leave our audience with some words of wisdom, start from the top. What would you do? You're getting ready to buy a house or maybe even sell your house. What would you tell a person who's preparing to sell their house? What should they do?
Yeah, one of the things I would recommend is look into doing a pre-listing inspection, where an inspector would come in. We would look at all of the same items that we would on the buyer's side, but now it's in the seller's control. So we could note any major areas, any red flags that the seller could either address on the front end and have repaired, or they can address that in their pricing of how they put that together. I recommend a pre-listing for sure. There's a lot of power in doing that and knowing your home before you sell it, so there's no surprises on the back end.
And as a loan officer, I recommend it too, because once you have something that's going to stop the sale of the house because this has to be repaired, or you're doing an escrow holdback for some repair, that it's just a nightmare. So get your house inspected prior to, make the upgrades or the changes or the repairs before you put the house on the market. And can inspectors be held liable, accountable?
Yes. So again, we do have that state licensing board, and so there is a process for resolving any complaints. And again, I think it goes back to a lot of people have a different perception of what inspectors do. It is visual only, and so we can't see everything. And a lot of times, certain issues may not be present during the inspection. Sometimes leaks are very, very slow, and if it's a vacant house and it's been empty for a long time, those leaks may take a little while to present themselves. And so sometimes there are limitations as to what we can catch and when we can catch them. But there is a process for that. Definitely call your inspector if you feel that there's anything that they've missed. And you know, they should be getting out there very, very quickly to at least look at the items and review the items with you and review the report with you, and just to make sure that it was something within our scope and that there were no limitations preventing us from catching that. And if you've, you know, if they feel like it is something that they may have missed, you know, there's always options to do refunds or, you know, cover the cost of the repairs potentially. And if there's something that the buyer, the homeowner feels like is much more serious, then they could file a complaint with the board.
Oh, you have a board too?
Yeah, I'm Board of Technical Registration.
So you're separate from the Register of Contractors?
Yep, very separate.
Okay. So that's good advice. I've learned some things here today. I'm really glad you came on. And
I appreciate you having me.
Yeah, and I know you've got an event that you have to go to, or you have a commitment to. And
yeah.
I just want everybody to know that, you know, this show is your show. We, like I said, we can't do it without your support. So visit lawmatters1030.org. I want Chad to give us your contact info.
Yeah, my phone number is 520-271-3005. And my email is chad.casper@pillartopost.com.
And that's all one word, pillar to post.
All one word, yeah, pillar to post. And okay. Then website is pillartopost.com/chadcasper.
And are you the only one in Tucson?
There are two other Pillar to Post franchisees in Tucson.
And where is the headquarters for Pillar to Post?
Toronto. We're an international company.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Okay. I want to thank you again for coming on. I want you to stay healthy, stay safe, keep your distance, and have a good weekend.